Check it, bro. I'm surfing with Fuse's new unbreakable glass bottle, bro.
That's actually Fuse's new plastic bottle, and there's a drink inside, bro. Fuse, vitamin and mineral-enhanced beverages infused with quality ingredients and exceptional taste. And now with its new plastic bottle, Healthy just got portable.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. My buddy Jacko is going to come on a little bit later on to discuss this Madonna A-Rod thing, which has really ignited the country. Maybe the biggest story of this decade. But first, I wanted to have my buddy Rob Stone on because he is hosting Around the Horn, not only this week, but the last week in July. And he also lives in Tampa Bay and is a legitimate Rays fan, the only Rays fan I know. And with the Rays really becoming baseball's top story, I would say, right now, I thought we'd have him on to discuss the resurgence of the Tampa Rays. So let's have him on right now. Rob Stone, what's happening?
You're like such a TV guy, radio guy, internet guy,
multimedia
guy
baby.
Now, man, you're everything. You're dynamic.
Stop. Just stop.
Why is that? You're a friend. I don't have to butter you up.
That's your opener. You're artificially buttering me up. That was terrible.
I was going to talk bowling, but I thought this would be stronger.
Well, listen, thanks for pulling the knife out of Tony Reale's back and being able to do this podcast.
Yeah,
it's great.
There's no Wally Pippen going on right now.
Did you have Dexter, the guy from Dexter, like get all the blood off and no fingerprints traced to you or anything?
We're in D.C. I got crime labs working out on my side. It's all about having connections in the right sports. Come on, no. Tony's out getting married this week. So,
I don't think it's fair that you're sending him Wally Pitt pictures. Do you get that joke?
Those have leaked already to the internet.
Do you get the Wally Pitt reference?
I do. I thought I said it before you did.
Good. Because he didn't start following baseball until about 5 years ago.
Oh.
Well, it's true.
You
grew up in Middle Connecticut. It's not like you had a team.
No, you're right. You're right. I wasn't hardcore by any teams.
Now you're hardcore.
I was more a Sox guy, and now I'm hardcore Ray guy. Probably the only guy you know and may ever know that's a hardcore Ray guy, unless you're friends with Dick Vitale. I don't think you are.
Let's shelve that for about 5 minutes and discuss this week and next week. You're hosting Around the Horn.
Actually, it's just this week. The last week
I thought it was
July,
next week.
I'm doing it as well, yeah.
Okay, so two of the weeks this month you're hosting Around the Horn. What is it like? What is it like to host that show, and how the hell did they come up with that scoring system?
It's actually, I tell you what, it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. It's such a relaxed atmosphere here. You can really be creative. I love listening to the columnist off air during the conference call earlier in the day, and their comments are really smart. You know, I mean, I think it kind of has an unfair reputation as, you know, little joke fest here and there, and you know, a lot of people yelling and screaming. But it's for people who are pretty passionate about their feelings and their beliefs on all things sports, and it's been great. The scoring system, that was my one big concern. You know,
do the scoring?
I do the scoring, and I'll admit I've been a little gun shy in the whole mute button. I think I've only done it once so far, because I don't want to disrespect these great journalists, but.
Stop it. God, you're like Eddie Haskell.
No, I know. But, you know, the thing is, I can't believe it. I've done it a couple of days, and no one has picked up the pointers of, like, listen, if you talk soccer, if you talk to Tampa Bay Rays, if you talk bowling and Colgate University, or you make me laugh, you're getting points, sometimes multiple.
Or late 90s wrestling music.
Yeah, I've been dropping the pro wrestling knowledge, and the people at, you know, Around the Horn and PTI, they literally share the same offices. There's like a wall separating them. And I think I'm a little too lowbrow for them. You know, I'm like, hey, and talking intro music and Triple H and all this stuff, and they just kind of look at me and roll their eyes. In fact, we did a survey today, and only less than half of the people in the Around the Horn studio have actually been to a live pro wrestling event.
And
my goal to change that.
How many in the office bought the first wrestling-themed soundtrack on the first day it came out in 1999?
Did I buy it on the first day? But I know I had it.
You bought it on the first day.
By the way.
You bought it on the first day.
You and I changed Volume 1 and Volume 2.
We did
a straight-up trade.
Oh, yeah, you might be right.
It's never been returned.
That was one of the lower moments of my life because we would queue it up, and then one person would walk into the room, and we'd play whatever theme they wanted. I mean, we were like almost 30 years old at that point.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Embarrassment.
And in a shocker, none of us were married.
No, none of us were married. Although I think you were headed that way. But, yeah, the wrestling themes, I think, have gotten a little too complicated and a little too metal rocky.
But I agree.
In the late 90s, they were great.
I just want the old school, you know, just the whole rock intro, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right. Glass breaking.
Yeah, it's just simple and effective. And I tell you what, The Undertaker still gives me chills every once in a while.
Yeah, that one's good. The Jesse James, when he used to do the Oh You Didn't Know, like that used to bring the house down.
Absolutely.
I don't think they have anybody like
no,
that.
No, they have nothing that's emblematic of where the world is these days, and that this is a must-have on a CD. And probably because you don't see too many WWE CDs floating out there anymore. They're too busy with all their pay-per-views.
I didn't even tell you this. I went to SmackDown like 3-4 weeks ago. Because my friend Sal, who works for Jimmy Kimmel's show, they did some cross-promotion thing and ended up wrestling Santino, who's this guy they have in the thing. So I made the just unconscionably bad mistake of bringing my daughter.
Oh, no, that was horrible.
Yeah. Well,
oh, my Lord.
Sal told us that he was coming out about 7:45, and, you know, she loves going out, and they have popcorn and soda there. So I was like, well, I'll bring her. So, of course, Sal doesn't come out, and then at 8 o'clock, they have to change it from SmackDown or whatever the other show is, and they do, like, a whole fireworks thing. You know how they do that in the beginning,
yeah.
Like all the fireworks?
Yeah, pyrotechnics. Yeah, it's great.
I've never seen her more scared ever, and probably she would never be more scared. She had no idea it was coming. I didn't know it was coming. I mean, I was like, hey, there's going to be some fireworks. I mean, it's loud. It's scary. It goes on for 10 seconds. She didn't even start crying because she was too shocked to cry. Like, it went two levels beyond. So then it was like she just want excuse me. She just wanted to go. So the next 45 minutes was, I want to go, I want to go, I want to go. And then it was, I have to go potty, I have to go potty, I have to go potty. And finally, she ended up kind of half sleeping on me. Because I didn't know when Sal was coming out, so I didn't want to go take her potty. So anyway, I get up after he does his thing. She's half asleep, and my leg is covered in pee.
Oh, tremendous.
And I was like, did you pee on me? And she's like smiling, and she's like, oh, you know, give me one of those, oh, yes, looks, you deserved it.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah, and that was my one and only wrestling experience with my daughter. It'll never happen again.
Well, I'm all fired up because I'm back here. They tape PTI and Around the Horn here in D.C., right in D.C. It's awesome. I love being around the city.
In a nice area, too.
It's a wonderful area, right by the Verizon Center. Is that what they call it now? Where the Caps and the Wizards, don't call them the Bullets, play, all that stuff.
Right.
Whatever. It's walking distance. And all I know is when I'm here later in the month, WWE Monday Night Raw is in town. And I'm like, there is no way I'm going to be visiting a monument or museum that day. I'm heading to the Verizon Center. And I'm trying to corral some tickets to bring the upper crust of Around the Horn with me.
That would you should do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Monday Night Raw is the best one because that has the best guys in it. But
yeah.
I will say that as you get older and you just kind of look around and see some of the people that are in the crowd.
It was tremendous when we were in college. And you get like a 12-pack of Bush or Peels with you and your buddies. And you go, and it's just everywhere you look, it's entertainment. Whether it's the crowd or the parking lot or what's going on. And that's when it was old school. That's when it was best.
Well, now the crowd is kind of the equivalent to what it's like when you get chosen to be on a jury.
Where are you people from?
You're in the room with all these people, and you're like, do we all live?
Have you ever been on jury duty, by the way?
I just got the call. It's going to be next month. I did it in Boston. I was in a murder trial.
Wow.
And attempted murder trial, I'm sorry. And we ended up giving the guy 7 years. And as he was leaving the courtroom, he kind of all looked at us individually like he was trying to memorize our face in case we ever ran into him again.
Right.
Bad times. I got to say, I didn't like being on a jury.
But I'm impressed you made the cut because I've been called in a couple times. And you go in saying, man, the last thing I want to do is spend X amount of days or weeks dealing with some piddly case.
Right.
But then when you don't get picked, you get PO'd.
I'm
like, you took this Yahoo over me? I'm like, I actually have some intelligence, some background. I'll care. I'll listen. I'll make a right decision. I got upset as I'm leaving in the huff after 3 hours of sitting in wooden chairs.
Well, what's funny was the trial, my trial was like a week, and it's so freaking boring. So I had a notebook, and I was pretending I was taking notes, but I was really writing stuff for my column because I had my own website.
Productive week ever for you.
Yeah, so I was handwriting columns, and I ended up getting chosen either as a foreman or an assistant foreman because people are like, oh, he's been taking notes all the time. Meanwhile, I've written like five NBA columns. But it was definitely interesting. So let's go back to the Around the Horn thing. So you've hosted studio shows. You've hosted now this show. You've done bowling play-by-play. You've done a college basketball game with me. You've done World Cup soccer.
Darts.
You've done darts.
Skiing.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about
the
skiing.
Yeah, I don't know.
The skiing, was that a low moment?
Actually, you know, it was one of those things where I was like, boy, what am I getting myself into? And now that I'm away from it, I wish it came back. I mean, I got to go to Europe twice and essentially skied on the house and got to do some work. It was a wonderful gig.
Where does assigning points to Woody Page for a good sports point rank in the career highlights?
I tell you what, I like Woody. I thoroughly enjoy because he comes out swinging at me right off the bat. And I appreciate that. You know, I'm all about self-deprecating humor, and he feeds right into that. He's happy to deprecate on me.
Now, what are you doing for Olympics and soccer and that whole thing?
No Olympics. If it's not on ESPN or ABC, there's
nothing. You're not anchoring our soccer coverage from Beijing or anything?
not that I've been notified of yet, but who knows, Billy? You know my schedule. I send you texts and emails like, hey, right, listen to this project that I'm on. And then you laugh and then you respond.
Do we have a chance to win a gold medal in either men or women?
Women's soccer, absolutely. Yeah, I would say women's soccer were probably the favorites. Men's soccer.
See, I'm locking out of the women's soccer team because of that whole goalie thing.
Yeah, well, she's back on the team.
I know, but I think that's bad. I think that hurts their chemistry.
Really?
Yeah.
I was kind of, you know, I was, I got.
Why don't you explain this story quickly?
The whole story is Hope Solo got benched leading up to the biggest game of the tournament at that point for the U.S. For a veteran, Brianna Scurry. And Hope Solo had done very well, and everything leading up to that Olympic was really in memory of her father, who had recently passed away. And she was really playing the tournament for him.
And she had three straight shutouts, right?
Yeah, she was doing wonderful. And, you know, I think we can all admit, without me being sexist, that women have different hormones than we do, right? That's nature, right? That's science. Somebody's got my back on that.
Yeah, I would say they're a little more emotional, yes. By the way, that's definitely coming out
of
the podcast.
Not that you or I have ever experienced that with our wives.
Oh, I experience it every day. I'll openly admit it.
But I don't know how a sports locker room filled with females operates. I know if it was a men's locker room, you know, hey, you say your things, you get it out, you know, maybe you'll take a swing at one another, but it's over, it's past. But for women's sports, I think it really lingers. And I could never get over that because I'm not a woman. I don't understand it. But my point was the coach made a bad call. The coach screwed everything up, put everybody in these bad situations. He's the one who should be taking the blame, but Hope Solo had a follow-up comment, which, you know, kind of alienated her teammates. But
she was dumb and she would have made those saves and a couple other things.
Yeah, you don't sandbag your teammate. You got to have their back, you know. But, you know, she was very emotional. It was a difficult time for her, and she spoke like a young American, you know, does so often.
And then they ostracized her.
Yeah, and now they're slowly letting her back in.
Because she's the best girl on the team in the goalie spot.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, you raise an interesting point because, you know, men and women are different. And we love to pretend that everybody's the same, but the reality is people are different. And men deal with each other a certain way. We're more upfront. We hash things out quickly if there's a problem. Like if I hear that you're mad at me, I'll email you. Why are you mad at me? You know, and we'll just hash it out. Whereas with women, it kind of festers more. They don't come right out and tell each other what's wrong, and they'll tell their other friends, and then it festers and festers, and eventually it comes out. So you put that situation with a sports team, an all-women sports team, you can kind of see how that would happen.
Yeah.
Whereas with the guy, it would be, you know, the guy would, I mean, if that happened with the men's soccer team, how do you think that unfolds?
Right, completely different. Completely different.
Like the guy probably goes in, yells at the coach, He gets it out of his system even before the game.
Yeah, and that's it.
And then it's over.
It's done. I agree. And, you know, that's a problem in women's sports. You know, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of, you know, famous female athletes. And, you know, when a male authority figure is there as a head coach, you know, they don't get oftentimes what's going on. And the guys have to learn to say, listen, I need to go to my captains or my leaders and say, all right, you know, tell me what's going on right now with this team, because I don't get it, because this is not the way we would operate.
Right. Why does it seem like we're having like this little weird issue here? Because
right,
I
right.
Can't
what
figure
is going
out the
on
Genesis
between
is.
A and B? You know,
right.
And it's I don't understand. Well, it's just like marriage. You know, there's half the time I'm like, all right, I'm getting vented at, I'm getting yelled at, I'm at the airport, I'll take it like a man, and I'll walk away when I get on the plane, and I'll forget about it.
Well, you had a wife that was pregnant with twins, so the hormones must have been like just through the roof.
It was awesome. I think there's a Newsweek article today that comes out, and it was on NBC Today, where it was like, your happiness, having children, each kid you get, you know, it's like, how much does it increase your happiness?
Yeah.
And it said, actually, your first child, your happiness decreases 7%. And I'm like, oh, what does it do with twins on top of that?
It's like square root. It's 49%.
It's unbelievable. I absolutely love it. But let me tell you, Billy, there's at least once a week where I yell out, I did not sign up for this.
That is, to have the single kid followed by the twins is one of the tougher straws to draw.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, that's good. It's been good for my career.
Well, plus you're traveling.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so you're in Washington for 5 days and you ditch the family, basically.
Yeah, this is a tough stretch, being gone for about five and a half days. So,
all right, let's talk about MLS, because
you want to talk MLS?
I do. I want to talk
tremendous.
About MLS.
I didn't even bring this up when we were talking yesterday. This is on your own. I'm excited.
The league still exists, right?
Oh man.
What I'm asking, it's a fair question.
It's thriving.
Is the All-Star Game coming up?
All-Star Game is coming up. And I sent an email to you in Toronto. I want you to go. You got to go see MLS
not
in
going.
Toronto.
Definitely not going.
I know. But A, it's a wonderful city. And B, the environment is borderline European over there for their soccer games. The crowds in Toronto are just absolutely amazing.
How, in your opinion, how much has the Beckham thing helped, or has it just been completely overrated?
No, I think it's actually helped a lot. I mean, certainly
a lot, you would say?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's either been the number one or the second best thing to happen to this league. And the one battling that would be new stadiums coming into the league, where these teams can now control their revenue better rather than just getting raked over the coals by these big, massive stadiums that technically don't really want these teams here and treat them like second or third class citizens.
You mean like the one they built in Carson, California?
That's been good. That's made money. The Home Depot Center, you know, and two teams share it. It's been a wonderful project. You know, the X Games are there all the time. You know, they're making a cut of that money. So that's been good. But David Beckham, you know, it's still carries on. You know, Jimmy Kimmel had him on a couple weeks ago during the NBA. He's still bringing big crowds. He's bringing newspaper people. If something happens with him, it still makes the news, and it makes commentary, which is more than MLS was really kind of getting without him, and it's continuing, and it's bringing some international cred. You know, one of the problems, though, is all these big international soccer guys, they see that Beckham, you know, is cashing a huge fat paycheck, and now they start kind of throwing out America and Major League Soccer as a potential destination, really to try and jack up their price in
right.
Europe. So they're kind of playing MLS a little bit. But no, I think it's still working, and I think it's going to be a wonderful story the next couple of years as he tries to make the English national team that tries to qualify for the 2010 World Cup. And he's an iconic figure. I mean, you're out there in LA. I mean, you must see pictures and hear tidbits of him and Posh on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah, was that some sort of setup to make me sound like a douche from LA?
No, it wasn't. Not at all.
Okay, good.
You're not. I know that.
I will say, though, I do think Beckham is an A-list celebrity.
Absolutely.
Like, I think if you're just eating at a restaurant and you judge people by the reaction of the other customers, if that person walked in, I think he'd be in that top group.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, because I think the Posh thing pushes over the top, and she's definitely interesting looking. I mean, she's so skinny. Like, it's almost like looking at like a third species or something.
Have you seen her in person?
I have not. I've heard conflicting reports.
Really?
What is your
I haven't seen her in person, but I'm all in favor of seeing her more.
Well, she's very skinny. So if somebody looks skinny on TV, they're going to look emaciated in person.
Yeah, good point.
Because the TV adds like about 12 pounds. But what do you, you've dealt with Beckham a few times. You like him?
Yeah, I really do. He's got a wonderful personality. It's not fake. He's really happy to be here. He's happy to try and strengthen this game in the States. But what I like the most about it is, he's not here just to cash a paycheck. He's busting his tail. He gets upset when they win or when they lose, and he wants to win. And he gets on his teammates, and he wants to make his team in this league better. And, you can see it on the field. Somebody takes him down, he's popping up right back in their face. He'll take some, slide tackles at some other guys. So this is not, Sunday co-ed rec league, out on some YMCA baseball outfield for him. This
right.
is legit for him, and well, I love watching him play.
With the U.S., we've had some hopefuls. Like, first it was the Beasleys,
mm-hmm.
and then Landon Donovan. People were kind of hoping maybe he'd become the guy. Do you see anybody in the league right now that could potentially happen for?
No. No, and I don't mean that as a knock, but, being the guy means you're something special, I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of great NBA players that we would love, but there's not too many Kobes out there, and same in Major League Baseball. So I don't see that personality yet, and that's the problem with soccer in the States is that everybody is hunting for that one person. Like, here comes our savior. Is it Freddie Adu? Is it Landon Donovan? Is it this? Is it that? Is it, Jozy Altidore, which is a wonderful story. A teenager signing with a Spanish club for a record deal for an American player, And,
right.
He's got a chance. He's big, athletic, and he's a forward. If he can score, scoring is what people care about. There's wonderful defenders in any sport, but they don't get the pay or the pub. It's all about can he score runs? Can he put it in the basket? Can he put the ball in the back of the net? And
well,
Jozy Altidore's got a chance.
But here's the next question. If that person did start to evolve or develop into something where they might reach that level, wouldn't the European teams just
absolutely. Yeah, this has been kind of an interesting byproduct of MLS is that the league here in the States has become, it's become a buyer of young, cheaper talent in like Central and South America. They have a bit of a pipeline in those countries and areas of the country. But we've become a supplier now to Europe. Mm-hmm. And people in Europe, the clubs in Europe, recognize the United States and good chunks of the African continent as, the last great untapped soccer world out there. And scouts are here constantly looking at American talent because they know they can get them relatively on the cheap. And if they get them young enough, they can bring them into their academies and their clubs and start training them and teaching them, the European soccer way. So, I mean, there's a long, long list of young American players who have been plucked at a rather early age and are doing quite well for themselves.
Well, who's the best American in Europe? Casey Keller?
Well, no, because he's aging. He's up there. Tim Howard, goalkeeper.
Oh, that's what I meant. I meant Tim Howard.
Yeah, Tim Howard right now is up there. Another great story is the coach's son, Bob Bradley, the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. His son, Michael Bradley, had a killer year in Holland, put in a ton of goals, and now he's getting, serious looks at from some, mid to upper range teams in the English Premier League.
I read about him actually. He would hug his teammates and pull his jerseys over their head. Wait, so let me ask you this.
Oh.
So Euro 2000.
You have a follow-up soccer question. This is
I have
awesome.
A follow-up to my follow-up soccer question. So Euro 2008.
How many people are still listening to the podcast?
No, I think people are always kind of intrigued to know see what's happening with soccer. They don't mm-hmm. want to get involved, but they want to be kept in the loop.
Yeah,
in case
it
does happen.
Becomes big, they want to be there.
So this is good. I think they're enjoying this.
All right.
So Euro 2008 that ESPN did, and ESPN's made a real commitment to
yeah.
soccer, which, they basically sacrificed the NHL to make the soccer commitment. But the Euro 2008 got a lot of buzz, surprisingly. I think a lot of people watched it. I don't know if it's just because I was in L.A. last week or, people really care a little bit more about soccer out here. But, I was in the farmer's market at the Grove last week. The soccer game is on one of the TVs at lunchtime. 20 people surrounding this bar watching it. And I got a lot of emails about it too, which surprised me. And I actually found myself watching it because I thought it was very exciting. So does that hurt the MLS or help it?
Oof.
Like, if European soccer starts to catch on and the fans here start to know the Premier League teams and they start to follow the playoffs in the spring, I almost feel like that's bad for the MLS.
Well, I think there's – I don't know. I don't know yet because there's two trains of thoughts, and I believe in both of them. And one of them is the fact that the more soccer is seen and appreciated here in the States, the better it is for everybody, particularly MLS. But on the flip side, when you're watching – these wonderful games, you know, played during the time of the year where there's not much going on.
With the best possible crowds and the best possible athletes.
Yeah, best environment, best athlete, best games, high drama, great theater. And you watch one of those games, and then later in that night, you happen to go over to an MLS game. You know, it's not a fair comparison, but people are saying, hey, I watched this, and a couple hours later I'm watching this, which just pales in comparison. And it would, you know, I mean, it's watching the Red Sox Rays series right now, and then later in the day going to go see your son play T-ball, and you're like, I need a bullet for my head. It's not fair.
You have the countries. Like, I just think it doesn't even matter what the sport is. If you've got, like, Germany playing Spain,
yeah,
it's going to be exciting. You could watch them play darts, and I would be into it.
No, I agree.
Actually, maybe I wouldn't.
And that's why the World Cup is so big. You know, nationalistic pride is huge. And I'll give, you know, without, you know, patting the company that pays our bills, you know, on the back too much. But I give ESPN a ton of credit for this recent wave of respect for the sport. You know, and I don't know this, but I have got to assume that from high above, there came some pretty harsh memos to some of the faces or the bosses of the faces on ESPN saying, listen, you know, no longer is soccer on our air a joke. You know, no longer do I want to hear, you know, the funny lines about where these guys are from and how they pronounce and the diving and the ridiculous goal celebrations. It's time to treat this as what it is, a world-class international sport that is the most dominant sport in the world.
And then the other thing is that we have a lot of daytime hours fill.
Yeah,
what's going on in those hours?
Nothing.
Like, we're showing SportsCenter. So
exactly.
You have this geek, all of a sudden you have 80,000 people in some stadium rooting for Germany and Spain, this world-class, you know, soccer game playing for real stakes. Like,
have you been to a World Cup game yet? I know I bug you every 4 years.
I would go if, you know, if they had a World Cup that was within like 10,000 miles of this country.
Yeah.
Because I missed out when I might have actually gone to one of the 94 games and forgotten it because I got drunk. It's possible. I may have been there at a 94 game.
I may have been with you. Who knows?
I did watch a couple. Like, I actually did watch the Brandy Chastain pull off the shirt game, which ironically is probably the most famous soccer moment in America in the last 15 years, 20 years.
It was in 99.
Yeah, last 25. What would be the competition for that?
I don't think there is. You know, you couldn't. That's an iconic image that is a you know, emblazoned on our brains for soccer in the States.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, I was there when the Celtics won the title, and I was probably 15 feet away or 20 feet away when Paul Pierce dumped the Gatorade on Doc Rivers. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, wow, that's dumb. That's going to delay the game. And now I think that's kind of become an iconic NBA moment, or it's at least headed in that direction. Like, people remember it, and it was neat, and it was cool. And it's just interesting, like, the decision to pull off your jersey and show your jogging bra.
Yeah, she's a wonderful person too. I've had the opportunity to work a season with her, and plus, and she's awesome, smart.
God, you're handing out compliments left and right.
Do I have negatives on anybody? I mean,
no,
I must. There's
you really
somebody
don't
out there.
All right, let's talk about the Rays because
I came
to visit you last summer. I wrote a column about it. I did a photo essay that included the what were those onion rings we bought?
The infamous Bloomin' Onion.
Oh, the blooming onion that left a grease stain that almost looked like a tornado had hit the cardboard box. So depressing. More Red Sox fans than Rays fans. I still remember being in that store with you looking at like the 50% off Baldelli jerseys and you were telling me, yeah, they're changing the name next year. They're changing the uniforms. And I was making sarcastic jokes like, that'll change everything. And meanwhile, it changed everything.
It has. You know, they've done a wonderful job rebranding themselves. And
I'm giving you negative points every time you say wonderful.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they are.
I'll say this: they are the most entertaining baseball team to watch right now.
I agree with you.
Without a doubt, they are fast. They'll run the bases. They'll steal on you. They have good pitching. They have drama in just about every game. And it's fascinating baseball to watch right now. And I'm a huge fan of the underdog. And when the underdog happens to be my team, I'm downright giddy. And I find myself with the game on in the background every time I'm home. Either I'm watching it, or I got a naked eye to it, or I got some kid screaming at me, but I'm still kind of paying attention to the game. My son is 2.5 and is transfixed. You know, he's got a raised ball, raised bat. He's got a raised hat that we have to wear every time we go outside. And, you know, I was in and working in the local sports market in Tampa when the Bucks were horrendous. And I was also there when Tony Dungy took over, and you could kind of feel this momentum. You'd start to see a few more Bucks hats and shirts out in public, which you really didn't see that much of. And I remember saying to Tony, I'm like, man, this thing is turning. You know, they got some good draft picks with Brooks and Sapp and Lynch and Allstott. I'm like, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And you get the same feeling with the Rays. I see so much Rays gear now in the Tampa area. I own two hats alone and a couple shirts.
Well, and in fairness, you owned that last year.
No, this is new stuff.
But I'm saying you also wear the old stuff, so you can't be caught a bandwagon jumper.
Yeah, but it's people who never followed the Rays, didn't even care, are suddenly making comments to me about them, and I just love the national exposure they're getting. And
well, how much of it is bandwagoning?
You know what? That's the thing. I'm not sure how many people are on the bandwagon. I think it's more just an interesting story. I don't think there's fans on the bandwagon.
Right.
I think right now it's just an ESPN is pouncing on it. You know, they have the ESPN game on tonight from Tampa. They sent a reporter crew down. It's getting the exposure. They deserve it. With the kind of season they're having and the way they're doing it, I mean, this could become, one of the greatest all-time stories in baseball. And I'm not a historian. I don't work for, the Elias department over there who's got all the, you're forgetting about the Brooklyn Dodgers and who I'm like, I don't know this stuff. But all I know is, worst to first, a team that's been a laughingstock, plays in the stadium that they're trying to get out of.
Worst stadium ever.
Yeah, and they've spent millions upgrading that stadium to try and make it, a better environment, and it is better, but they know, everybody knows, that they need their own park, they need that revenue, they need that feel, but they are unreal at home, Bill.
When you look at last year and the old name, but not just the losses, but you had some there was like a weird chemistry in the team.
Yeah.
You had some unlikable guys that got into trouble outside of the stadium, and so they go and they sign Percival, who I guess has become just a leader. They got rid of a couple of the problem guys. And now there's really not anybody on the team that you wouldn't dislike, right?
No, I mean, the only guy that I guess there's still some question on is maybe a B.J. Upton. I don't think people can get a real good read on him. And I'm surprised that there hasn't been more press about him to find out who he really is, because I don't know that yet. You know, I mean, I know some of these guys are good guys and really happy, but BJ, I can't quite get a feel. And, here's a guy that came in with all the hype, be the next great shortstop, and they bring him up, doesn't work, put him back, bring him up, bring him back. And they finally said, listen, you're going to center field.
Yeah.
Let's do this. And he's blossomed. He's a wonderful hitter. He's making great plays, but you don't hear the sound bites. You don't read the clips. There's not much about him, which, it makes me a little leery about him, but, Joe Maddon, at this point he's a lock for manager of the year. I'll be very curious to see how many all-stars. I know none will be voted in, but, there's a couple guys there that really deserve it, and they've done a great job drafting and their trades. You talked about getting rid of, Elijah Dukes and Delman Young, and a lot of people were down on them for the Delman Young trade. Well, they get a starting pitcher, Matt Garza, who's been lights out lately.
I like that trade. I thought that
Bartlett,
was a smart
one. Shoring up the infield, and they've got great defense, and they have pitching now, which they haven't had in years. Whenever they went to the bullpen, I mean, you just saw Rays fans in the past just drop their head and say, oh, man, what's coming now? Who would know?
Well, and if you had a fantasy team in the American League like I did, you would never have a Rays reliever.
Never.
It was like one of the rules. And now there's, they're bringing out guys left and right.
Yeah.
In fact, that's why they won the last two games.
Right.
We're taping this on Wednesday afternoon, but they won those first two games against Boston because of the bullpen.
Yeah,
their bullpen came through. Percival actually got hurt, and it still came through. But did you hear about, or you must have heard about, the Monday night game when the ball hit the light fixture?
Yeah, I was actually watching it. I found a sports bar.
You gotta love when the stadium rears its ugly head.
Well, I love the outfielder because I'm watching. I can't hear anything. I'm like, oh, can of corn to right, can of corn. The guy's just standing there. I'm like, pick up your glove, son. Get it up there. And then I see this little white thing drop about 30 yards from him. I'm like, SOB, man, what happened?
I will say I think the key moment for their season because, you know, about during the finals, I forget what game it was. Maybe it was – I guess it was so it was mid-June because it was – before game one of the NBA Finals, when they had the fight with the Red Sox. And they really, like, pounded the hell out of Coco Crisp. Like, they, you know, they had an incident in the previous game, or the previous series, I forget. But, you know, they threw at him. He charged the mound. Five Rays jump on him. Like, they're
like
all trying
to sucker
punch
him. I mean, they came long distance for it.
And when you look at the way they responded to that brawl versus the way the Red Sox responded to it, like, the Red Sox had guys, like, jogging out. And then our team ended up getting in a fight in the dugout later in the game. And it's just, I don't know. I thought that was a pivotal moment. It made me feel like the Rays were a little more together or something.
Yeah, and you know, also, in spring training, there were a ton of incidents between the Rays and the Yankees. And, you know, there's something to it. You know, it was almost like the Rays, and I don't blame the Rays for these. Actually, a lot of times, you know, these incidents were triggered by the other team.
Right.
But they weren't backing down, and they were saying, you don't respect us? All right, you know, respect, you know, Johnny Gomes coming barreling out of, you know, out of the bench area and plowing you over.
He should have been arrested.
You got my back. And like I said, they're so much fun to watch, and they had that string of walk-off wins.
Yeah.
And, you know, rarely do you really see that energy and that excitement and that brotherly love on team sports anymore. And you saw it when they rush, you know, the home plate after the walk-off home run. I mean, the whole team is there, you know, bent knees, crowding home plate, waiting just to beat the bejeebies out of their buddy who just won the game for them. They're hopping around, they're jumping, and I know there's another train of thought saying, you know what, act like you've been there before. It's a win, you know, there's how many games in the season, you're 34 in. But you know what, for them, this is new, and it's fun, and it's addictive.
Yeah, I'm with you. I always have a little mental checklist for when a team is really, you know, do we have to watch out for this team or not? And with the Rays, like, they're hitting all the points. Like, they've had some weird wins. They've had a couple walk-offs. They've had a bench-clearing brawl where they did a nice job in it. And now I think baseball is one of those sports that it really, a lot of it comes down to momentum. And it's just like you play the first 80 games and things fall into place. And sometimes you can just become a better team than you actually are. And it seems like that's happening with the Rays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you look at that guy last night. You didn't see it because you were in your hotel room, but the Australian guy, Balfour, comes in and he's throwing 109 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, this is stuff that normally should not happen. So, yeah, I'm worried about the Rays. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
Although I think Percival's going to break down.
Yeah, I know. He's already on the DL. And people keep saying, you know, when is their losing streak going to happen and how do they react to it? And what I love is that they've refused to let into that. You know, they've had a loss, but they'll bounce right back. You know, they'll maybe drop two and then they'll go on a run again. So, it's a great story, and Tampa's feeling it, and I'm absolutely loving it.
Well, the reason I'm really legitimately worried about them, and I mentioned this with my buddy Jack Owen, we were talking about them like in early April, I think, that the smoking gun for them is they have all these young guys in their farm system who are these, you know, were these top 10 picks or these highly regarded guys, and a couple of them are pitchers, and a couple of them are ready to come up and might actually give them like a shot in the arm in September. And nobody else has that.
Yeah.
Nobody else has like the number one pick of the 2004 or 2005 draft or whatever ready to come up in September as like this extra arm long relief in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So I'm a little worried about them.
Great minor league system they've built right now. And the one thing that I think is going to be really interesting is, you know, trade deadline, people would always come after the Rays and try and pluck some of their guys because they, you know, they had to. They're like, listen, we got a year left with this guy or 2 years, and he can make money for us now. Let's try and get some prospects.
Man.
This is the first time ever that the Rays are going to be buyers, not sellers. And I don't know if they buy anything. You know, the only thing that's a real big concern right now, you know, is Percival. You know, do they need another closer? But they're bringing guys off the bench that are doing the job.
Dan Wheeler's
fine. Been
really
and
good,
do you mess with the chemistry? Do you mess with the mojo? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. And they also, their catcher's hitting, too. I don't even really know what they need.
I said the same thing. If there's an injury, then we can start talking. And, you know, you can always have more depth, but I don't know. And I know they're not going to give up any of their studs.
I mean, I guess you could say they could upgrade the Hinsky spot.
Yeah,
But then again, he's one of the best team chemistry guys they have.
He's leading the team in homers, or he's right up there. So.
Last thing we got to talk about. We didn't talk about the bowling. You were a polarizing figure on the bowling tour. You were like the Kobe Bryant of bowling.
I didn't realize that.
The diehard bowlers, they were very upset at, what was it? Tell the story about
Hambone.
Tell the story about Hambone.
Oh, man. First bowling event I did, listen, and I was thrown into bowling. I didn't know much about the sport and its tradition, and I didn't want to make fun of it. I just wanted to do it. And
suddenly you're the voice of bowling.
And suddenly I'm the voice of bowling. And one of the first events I did, you know, I said, hey, you know, he's rolling for a turkey, which is three strikes in a row. You know, some of the lingo I did know, and I'm still learning. And I asked my guy next to me, I'm like, well, what is, you know, how do I get the name turkey? He's like, I don't know. So somebody, you know, emailed in, hey, during the old days when it was really tough to bowl, during the holiday season, the proprietor would give a guy on the team that would first bowl three strikes in a row a live turkey. All right. So I said, well, that's great. And I said, what's four strikes in a row? And he said, I don't know. And I said, well, let's give it a name. I said, it's Hambone. So for the next couple of weeks, I would just kind of goof. All right, he's going for a Hambone now. And, you know, my production TV guys just loved it because it was just, it was so ridiculous. And it was
upset that I wasn't involved in the decision making process there.
Well, it was off the cuff, and it was like
I would have gone with veal parmesan.
Well, there's room for a fifth strike.
Maybe fifth strike in a row is veal parmesan.
I'm putting it in the book right now.
Right,
I want to alienate more people, apparently.
Or how about meatball?
Meatball.
Meatball.
I had another one the other day. I'll have to remember.
Meatball.
And so it started kind of. I wouldn't say it was gaining momentum, but it became a running joke for us. And that was all. And a couple weeks into the season, my producer said, you know, hey, some of the bowlers are kind of coming out to me like, hey, you know, tell that new guy to calm down on the whole Hambone thing. And I'm like, all right.
No.
You know, I'm serious. And I said, you know what? That's fair because I want to be respectful to their sport. And if they think I'm making fun of them or the sport, I'm not going to do it. You know, that's fine. So I said, all right, I'll cut back. And then about a minute later, I walk by a bunch of fans who have Hambone signs and they're yelling Hambone at me. And I said, game on.
Right.
And since then, there are places like Omaha that it, and even out in LA, it's imploded and it's so much fun. And, I think if you asked a majority of the bowlers, they think it's a good thing and they feed off the crowd and they enjoy it. But there's certainly a lot of people that don't like it. And, you got to come to an event, Billy, to experience it yourself.
You sent me something. I forget if it was a blog or a message board where you're getting raked.
No, that was an actual newspaper article.
Oh, that's right. you got like lambasted by whoever wrote it, and this guy is like pushing bowling in a direction it doesn't want to go in, and it's
but
like,
then he turned
what direction
the end of
is
it
in?
Like, you know what? I think this is a good thing because all of a sudden people are talking about it and having fun. I've got a ton of Hambone t-shirts that people have given me. I was outside of the Indianapolis Bowling Center, and there's this guy in a BMW selling Hambone t-shirts out of the trunk of his car as I'm leaving. And he wouldn't even give me one on the house. Come on.
Really?
Some Yahoo in Michigan has trademarked Hambone.
Oh, see, you missed the boat on that one.
Yeah, but I don't want to be...
Well, they don't miss it with Meatball. Meatball, five in a row. Meatball. I like it.
I'll tell you what, when you join
us
on the live broadcast, I will let you go meatball on the fifth strike.
I am absolutely dying to do that. Unfortunately, when we were trying to figure it out during your first season, every location was like, we're in the eighth stage of hell on Thursday. And then we're in an offshore island near Bermuda on Friday. Like, it was like all these locations that I had no chance of getting to.
Well, we're gonna change that. We got a West Coast swing, but it always happens during NFL playoff time, and you're Pat crazy.
Nah, you might see me for the West Coast swing. But is it like West Coast cities that
near
me?
Did I tell you we're in Vegas?
Vegas is interesting.
Vegas, Vegas, L.A., Reno, Denver, and Medford, Oregon.
Interesting, Medford, Oregon.
Have you ever been to Medford?
I have not.
I did not know there was a Medford, Oregon until
there's a Medford, Massachusetts.
But it was actually very fun, Medford, Oregon.
So when does the tour start?
End of October, right around, right just before Halloween. It starts with one of the masters. Hello, Wichita, Kansas. That's where we'll be.
See, I might have to make that.
You know what?
I actually one of those.
Recommend coming to one of those, like Wichita or Omaha is awesome.
I'd like to go wherever there's a direct flight. That's my
prerequisite. No, I understand. That's
no connecting flights for me.
Maybe Detroit or Chicago, too.
Oh, I've always wanted to go to Detroit.
Who hasn't? And one of the perks about the Bowling Center in Detroit, it is literally running distance. It is a short sprint from the airport.
I'm going to get a bowling shirt that says Simbo on it in script writing.
Done and done. I guarantee you the PBA will get you a Simbo bowling jersey and accompanying shoes if you make it for a live event.
Did I ever tell you about my 199 at the Greenwich Lanes?
I think I actually did a 199.
I had a 191.
Did you bowl any meatballs?
No, I forget what it was, but going into the 10th frame, I had 173 with a spare, and I got an 8 on the first roll, so I had a 191. No, I'm sorry. However it worked out, I got an 8 for the spare, so I had a 181 or 171. 181. No, 170. I forget the scoring.
Right,
I can't figure out the scoring. Well, I had an 8 on the first pin, or the first roll. What is it, first roll?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had 2 pins left. There was a pin between them that was missing, or maybe even 2 pins. And I just needed to knock one of them down for 200. And if I knocked down both, then I would be rolling for the spare and potentially have, like, you know, a 211 or a 210, whatever. So I analyzed the situation with my buddies, Gallo and Gus, who were there.
You analyzed far too much. Oh, Gus was there.
Gus was there, and we decided that I should aim between the 2 pins, and that the odds of me actually going through the 2 pins and not hitting either of them were like
slim,
a million
right.
to one. Obviously, I would not be that good enough to be able to do that. So I did it, and it went right between the pins.
Field goal.
And it was devastating. 199.
That's nice. Did I tell you about my bowling in Norwich, Connecticut this year, the night before the tournament?
No. What'd you do?
Steve Mahady, our friend Mahady, joined.
Yeah.
I can't tell you too many details here, but let's just say free access to the lanes and free access to the bowling bar in the back.
Oh.
It's tremendous.
So what's your high score then?
I don't know, but it wasn't set there. I can guarantee you that.
I don't know
what my high score is. I got to get out there. They gave me a ball.
I feel like somebody who is the play-by-play voice for the PBA should be good at bowling.
I'm not bad actually, but I'm not good either. I'm like a 160-70 guy.
Get out of here! You're not that good.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. Yeah, you're probably right. No, I'm like a 150-ish. I'm a 150-ish.
I want you within 5 years. I want you traveling to these events with your own ball.
But you know me, I don't like carry-on. I don't like to check stuff. I want to carry everything on. I'm not going to carry my bowling ball. But I do have bowling shoes. I got free bowling shoes, a free ball that's not drilled, and plenty of bowling jerseys that I can wear now.
I will say about bowling, the disparity between the number of fans who follow professional bowling or the sport itself versus the number of people who actually enjoy the sport doing it themselves is wildly lopsided.
Yeah.
Because everybody loves bowling.
Yep,
there isn't one person who's like, no, I don't want to go bowling. If you throw out bowling to a bunch of friends, they'll want to do it.
And there's a lot of pro athletes that love bowling.
Absolutely. If you tell somebody that you went bowling, people are excited that you went bowling. Like, it's just one of those sports that is almost underrated.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you go. Good luck on Around the Horn.
Thanks, buddy. Good talking to you, man.
Keep us posted with the bowling thing and try to get that meatball thing going.
I will. Done and done.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, now's the time when we call my buddy Jacko at work to see how worried he is about the New York Yankees. We're actually going to scrap that segment this week in lieu of a new segment called How Worried Are You That Your Best Player Is Dating Madonna? Let's give him a ring.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Like a virgin, ooh, touched for the very first time. That's how A-Rod makes her feel.
Is that you, A-Rod?
Like a virgin touch for the 50,000th time, I think.
Something like that, yes.
Johnny.
Yes, Willie.
We had to call you. Your thoughts on really the Roy Hobbs, Mimo, whatever her last name was, situation of our generation.
It really, it's one for the ages. I mean, it's the New York Post, New York Daily News, Newsday's dream. a smash-up of two of the great tabloid subjects of all time. It's really like the perfect storm of tabloid covers, possibly.
Hey, you know, if we had talked about it enough, we probably could have predicted it, because she always has seemed to go for those Latin men over the years.
Yeah,
which was
true.
Weird, was she
one
married
of them
the British
her
guy.
Child, I think. Right.
Right. But then she married a British guy, which
you can't get farther away.
Yeah, you know her little Latino fascination had
exactly.
her totally fascinated. So now she goes back with is he a billionaire at this point?
It's got to be knocking on the door.
Half a billionaire.
Right.
But all right,
I
have some questions since you're on the East Coast, you're in the maelstrom. Isn't he married?
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, he's married, right?
He is, but it doesn't really seem to have stopped him in the past.
So is this like one of those JFK, Jackie Onassis marriages, or like did they break up and they haven't told anybody yet?
No, I'm thinking it's the former. I mean, I think that to some degree all of these celebrity/athlete wives make sort of a bargain, a deal with the devil, as it were.
Right.
Where in exchange for living a lifestyle that they never even dreamed of, and having the ability to literally do or buy anything that you want, they don't really mind if the husband, if they look the other way, well, the husband may do some things, quote unquote, outside the vows of his marriage.
So they turn the other cheek, so to speak.
Indeed. And that's not to say that there's not a tennis instructor or a pool boy on the side for Mrs. A-Rod either, you know? Who knows what's going on behind closed doors?
Yeah, I hope so. You know, my wife and I have a similar arrangement because when we got engaged, I said, look, I'm going to be very famous.
Right.
And I got to be me. I got to go out there and I got to hook up with other celebrities. And she learned to deal with it and she accepts it. And
it's beautiful. It's beautiful when you have that kind of an agreement.
Yeah.
Now that I'm really taking off on these podcasts, I suppose I should sit my fiance down and work out a similar agreement.
I think you should. I think you should put it in the prenup. Don't get mad at me if I hook up with other celebrities.
Okay. All right. That sounds good.
Well, hey, I feel extremely vindicated by this whole thing, because when the Madonna news broke about 4 days ago from when we're taping this, I predicted to the sports gal that she was going to bust out with an Ashton Kutcher celebrity type who was significantly younger than her, basically pull a Demi Moore, because that was the best career move for her. You know, she had a new album came out. Her new album came out, I think, a few months ago. Nobody really cared. She's kind of past her prime in the Us Weekly kind of that we live in now.
Sure.
So it was a natural move for her to target somebody younger and famous and kind of do that whole Demi Ashton thing, right?
You know what puts another spin on this, and this just occurred to me when you brought up Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher. Isn't Demi Moore a follower of that Kabbalah like Madonna is?
Right.
Is this one of the tenets of Kabbalah, if you're like a middle-aged famous celebrity, that you're entitled or required to go out and get yourself a younger celebrity?
It could be. I think it's that, and you have to wear a bracelet.
It would really be a way to they could really rival Scientology, because you could hook in like every middle-aged cougar wannabe woman. They could be like, well, I'm following Kabbalah because it entitles me, nay, it requires me to go and get myself a younger boy toy.
She's 48, right?
She's 49.
49, wow.
That's on the paper today. And A-Rod is a young pup of 32.
Wow. I mean, when you're having sex with her, it's really almost like entering the Hall of Fame. Like you're looking at various exhibits and plaques as you're going through the various floors.
It's like pitching to Babe Ruth in the mid-30s, yeah.
Right. Really. Oh, my God, that's Jose Canseco's plaque.
Mark Messier, right.
Yeah.
Dennis Rodman.
There should be a website that lists every celebrity that she betted over the last 25 years, rumored or proven.
That's extensive. That's a good autobiography right there, if she someday sits down and writes hers. Some good stories in that thing.
Yeah. It would be racy. I mean, she dated Warren Beatty. For a while, and he's like about 100 now.
This part's going to get cut, but I'm going to say it anyway. What do you think makes a better book? Who has a better autobiography, Madonna or her OBGYN?
That might not get cut.
Really? Let's hope not.
It's so fascinating. It's such a good wrinkle for this Yankee season. Yeah, no pun intended. Such a good Botox wrinkle. But you have this, and you have the Gambino's mustache and rejuvenated career. You had Chin Ming Wong, breaking every muscle and bone in his foot.
Just by running.
Just by running a straight line. You have the Phil Hughes debacle.
Ugh.
Although, as it turned out, Johan's not really lighting the world on fire either, so maybe he dodged a bullet there.
Hey, no, it's funny you say that, because when he pitched against the Yankees the other day, and now he's like 7-7, although he has a really low ERA, but I was saying to myself, I'm like, if they had traded for Johan Santana and he was 500, I would be, there wouldn't, everything in my house would be broken right now.
Right.
Because I would have thrown it and smashed it repeatedly. So
I mean, he definitely gives up the long ball, but beyond that, like, to have Felix Hernandez take you deep?
Yeah, that was scary.
When you get taken deep by Effer,
right.
That's King, a big deal.
King Felix.
By the way, they can't take that out because that's his acronym.
Effer?
Yeah, Felix Hernandez, Effer.
Okay.
It's like A-Rod.
That's Effer and A-Rod. All right. It makes sense.
Yeah. That's good, right?
It's good. We'll go with it.
All right.
I read somewhere, maybe it was ESPN, like, that scouts were saying that they thought that Santana's velocity was down a little bit.
Mm.
They were saying, you know, people were like, ooh, the Mets kind of got fleeced on that 7-year $135 or whatever his deal is. So, yeah, I'm not as brokenhearted about that as I was for a while.
I watched, you know, the Sox are about to get swept in Tampa Bay.
The upstart Rays.
The upstart Rays.
They 10 years of having the number one pick in the draft will pay its dividends, I guess.
Well, there's some fishy stuff going on there because they had, you know, Percival got hurt in one of the all-time fluke plays where the ball hit the speaker in the roof, and it was going to be the second out, and then he hurriedly tries to cover third base and ends up like doing whatever he did. I think he pulled the hamstring or whatever. I mean, the guy's like 100, but so anyway, so last night, the second game, Tuesday night, they bring in this guy, Balfour.
Yeah.
Grant Balfour, who, an Australian guy who's like 31, who didn't even make the roster heading into the season. His career stats are terrible.
Wasn't he a character on Melrose Place?
Grant Balfour, I think he was.
Doesn't it sound like it should be?
This guy comes in, and he's throwing like 109 miles an hour and gets the last four outs of the game. And then they're like, was that all adrenaline out there? I'm like, make this guy pee in a cup right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Tanyan Sturts of 2008. I couldn't believe it, though. Grant Balfour.
Like he's from Australia or something?
Yeah, which was – I wasn't expecting. I thought there was like something wrong with him. Like he was like – they started interviewing him. He's like, well, you know, mate, I just got, and I was like, is this, wait, this guy's Australian? So I went and looked it up. Yeah. So, didn't the Yankees have an Australian?
Graham Lloyd.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. It's Graham always Cracker. Weird to hear a baseball player randomly belt out the, Crocodile Dundee accent.
Put another shrimp on the barbie or whatever. Maybe it's not steroids. Maybe he just has some unique, herbs and plants from the outback.
Yeah, I'm not accusing him of anything. No. I'm just saying that this guy's 31 and was throwing 109 miles an hour last night. So
this is the biggest pseudo thing in the world is now everybody in Tampa is a big Rays fan.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest bandwagon hop of all time because you know you've been down there. You had
I was there last year
about it, and it's like no, you know, people had like Boggs jerseys like 5 years after he's retired because nobody was going to have like a current player on the Rays, you know.
I will say, I'm going to go in the other direction. I actually felt happy for that whole community because it really was so depressing last year. I mean, I did a whole photo essay with my buddy Stoner.
Yes.
About just how bleak it was. And then last night, they're showing the crowd, and there were actually like 30-year-old guys in the crowd wearing Rays jerseys. Like,
really?
That's got to be a first for that franchise.
Right, since everyone else is 70 wearing like a Tommy Bahama Hawaiian shirt.
There is something kind of fascinating, and it's happened over and over again where this team that's been jinxed for so long, whatever franchise or sport it is, all they have to do is either change their uniforms and or change their last name, and it seemingly rejuvenates them every time.
They got rid of the devil. They had an exorcism, and now they are reborn. That's what happened.
The Pats changed their jerseys, and it completely changed the course of the franchise. And then I remember the Bucks did it. I think the Broncos did it the year they won
That's
their first
point,
Super Bowl.
Actually.
So I'm thinking, if you're the LA Clippers, you sign Baron Davis.
Sure. Are you excited about the Baron Davis
era? Oh, very excited. Hey, I mean, you know, it debated on days on end whether to renew the season tickets with the guy I'm doing it with, Mike
right.
Cohen. And we, in the end, we decided to do it just because we have really good seats because nobody renews them anymore.
Right.
And now we have seats for this team that might actually make the playoffs. But
I think you should grow a beard and shave your head in solidarity with Baron for the coming year.
I might.
That's good.
I might. You know what I was thinking? You know, I haven't really had my guy, like the guy that I'm like his go-to guy for quotes and stories and like,
right.
You know, if he's unhappy, he texts me and then I write the story about it.
There
or
you
like,
go.
I have him on my podcast. You know, like Bucher has Kobe and Mark Stein has Nowitzki and Nash and Adande had Gary Payton. I'm not sure who he has now, but I've never really had my guy.
This
so I was thinking I might adopt Baron Davis as my guy.
And he's into the whole web thing. Doesn't he have like a blog or something, or he reviews movies, or doesn't he do something on the computer?
Yeah, he had a blog. He has a blog. He has he did movie reviews. I think he had a radio show in San Francisco. So basically, I want to be the Ahmad Rashad to Baron Davis's MJ. It's going to be my goal. I want to wear colorful suits and hang out in his entourage and laugh at his jokes and then write very benevolent things about him.
You are going to be so cool when you have a shaved head, a beard, and you're wearing about like a 14-button royal blue suit as part of Baron Davis's entourage. That is going to be fantastic.
After every game, I'll be hanging out in the hallway, and then he comes out, and I can do like a 9-step handshake with him.
I was just going to say, there better be a complicated handshake involved in this.
Complicated handshake, and then I'll write down like 2 quotes. And then I need a guy, and I'll fight him. I'll have Bucher on the podcast, and Bucher will be slamming Baron Davis for his field goal percentage. I'll be like screaming back at him.
Right.
You don't understand. He's taking the last second of the shot clock every time.
Does Baron Davis? He needs like a. Does he have a nickname? Is he like they call him like B Dog or anything? Or you know,
I think it's BD.
See, because that would be good if you're in the entourage and you could just refer to him by his nickname. You know, like AI.
I think he's BD, but the thing is, this goes back to the whole thing. Do you need a nickname when your name is Baron?
Right, you probably want to go by Baron because it sounds so impressive and regal. Yeah.
I wrote about this during the finals, but Lamar Odom, his nickname was L.O.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need a nickname when your name is Lamar. I don't think there's a lot of Lamars. You're not going to get confused with the other 3 Lamars in the locker room.
And when you're just going by the initials, you're not really trying. Except for KG, that kind of works. Maybe it works. Maybe I'm just rambling. I don't know. Maybe it always works. L.O., I'm not crazy about that.
Do you think sports teams, though, they work like when we were in college? I probably had like 5 nicknames in college, and you had at least 3.
Yes.
But do you think like these nicknames, like it's, you never hear like nicknames getting spawned for some weird story? Like when you became Jacko, I don't think I've ever told this story in the podcast.
No.
It happened because we drove to Siena during our sophomore year for a Siena Holy Cross game.
I don't think that's actually true. Wasn't it because? It was because we knew a guy named Jack Aminiak.
No. See,
and
you're
then,
wrong.
And then
no.
I was like, I like the name Jack. And you were like, we could call you Jack. But then he's like, you'd have to be Jack O. And then you were like, oh, that's I like that, Jack O. Because then it sounds like you're like a clown or like Michael Jackson, like Jack O.
No, see, you're wrong.
Because the Siena thing, by the time we saw Franco, I was already Jack O.
No, you weren't. You were not already Jack O.
Anybody that was on that Siena trip or anybody that remembers us from college, I want you to email Simmons, who we know his memory is always faulty.
Yeah, this is a little faulty.
And tell the truth.
But you're leaving out one crucial component. The reason we named you Jack O, and I thought it was a Siena trip, but maybe it was a year before, was because the Mass Pike toll operator on the Worcester stop, he had a name tag that said Franco.
Yeah, no,
we used to joke that was your father.
No, that was after I was already Jack O, though. I think I was Jack O, and then we saw the guy, and it was Franco, and we started dying, and you were like, that's your evil brother or something, or your father, Franco.
I thought it was, we thought it was your father. We joked that it was your father, and then you became Jack O.
I think he became my father after I was Jack O.
So you were already Jack O,
right.
And then we met Franco, the CD toll booth operator at the Worcester Mass Pike, and that became your joking, your in-joke
right.
father.
Exactly.
All right, you're probably right.
I
you do remember this stuff better than me.
Right, right.
But anyway, so that now that's
so
that's
that
a convoluted story.
Right.
Yeah, so... Why doesn't NBA players, why don't they have stories like, so we're playing poker one night on the charter, you know, and then that leads to some crazy
nickname.
Well,
this is what you and I have said for years in the program. There should be a mandatory where they describe everyone's tattoo, the significance, and where they got it.
Right.
And then now they could also have how he got his nickname and the story behind that. You told me that's not fascinating reading in like an NBA program.
I think there should be two programs handed out, one with the roster and then one that has pictures of every tattoo with the explanation for each.
And the nickname, the backstory is fantastic.
I meant to tell you this, actually. VH1 had some tattoo show on about the greatest celebrity tattoos. And it was, they'd show the tattoo and tell the story behind it. And then they'd have the snarky F-list comics come in and make jokes about the tattoo. But it was actually pretty interesting.
Was it?
And I was thinking, like, you know, ESPN doesn't really do shows like that anymore because they'd rather just show games. But that would be a good ESPN show. It's like a 13-part series about tattoos.
Sports Illustrated had that for a little while, where they had the picture of a guy's tattoo. And they would, you know, talk about why they got it and where they got it or whatever. It was a thing at Sports Illustrated briefly. They had, like, pictures. It was basically like an NFL thing. I think they talked about NFL players.
What's Sports Illustrated?
Sorry. Never mind. Maybe it was in ESPN, the magazine. I always get too confused.
They still have Sports Illustrated?
No, I'm not sure. I'm sorry I brought it up. That'll be cut, along with the Madonna stuff.
No, the Madonna stuff can't get... All right, we should go back to that, actually.
All right.
So, do you see A-Rod, his stats going up, down, sideways? What happens to him?
Well, I'd like to go back and take a look at the splits when she got involved with Jose Canseco. I don't know that it improved his career at all. So I'm always worried about A-Rod, and like, because he seems like he's always kind of sensitive and thin-skinned, that this over-the-top media coverage will cause him to, like, go off the rails. That
well,
makes me concerned. He's like a delicate flower that needs to be, like, taken care of, and everything has to be just right, it seems. So.
Is there there's a Yankees-Red Sox game at Fenway, I think, like 4 or 5 weeks from now?
They play at the Yankee Stadium, and like tomorrow, I think,
right.
They start.
But the Fenway version doesn't start like for 4 weeks. But, I mean, if you're in charge of the music at Fenway Park and you don't play Madonna songs every time this guy comes up, you should be fired.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Of course.
And I'd play some of the bad ones, too. Like, I'd play, like, Holiday. What was the song with the video, Material Girl?
Yeah.
When she was dressed like Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think Borderline is still pretty good.
You think it lasts? It's still with it? It's still good?
Well, not only a good song, but if you read the lyrics, really, like, you know, she got screwed over by some guy and was really tortured about it at the time. Well, do you remember when she had that documentary that she did?
With Warren Beatty?
Yeah, Warren Beatty was in it and a couple other people, and it was like her behind the scenes with the dancers. And
I do.
It was one of the first great slutty moments, I guess, in TV history, like just for 2 hours. Like it kind of like, I think, paved the way in to some degree to some of the stuff that happened in the real world. Because I remember there was like everybody was making out on the bed at one point. Like in 1990, this was like, you know, a mammoth deal.
Oh, yeah. God.
Now it's
nothing. She set the ground, you know. She was the trailblazer for Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera.
I will say that I thought she was just so freaking sexy in 1985. And then you look back at the pictures, and she doesn't hold a candle to anybody now.
No. I mean, if it was 1985, it would really be saying something, you know.
No, but I'm saying looking back.
Yes.
At her in the mid 80s, it's hard to believe.
Oh, the way she looks now, you mean?
No, I'm saying it's hard to believe we were all so enchanted by her.
Oh, by her, yeah. Well,
when you look back and she already had miles on her, like she looked kind of skanky.
Yeah, it was a different time.
It really was.
She broke the mold of June Cleaver, whoever we were into in 1985. Who was wholesome? Mallory on Family Ties, you know? I don't know. Who was the heartthrob? Molly Ringwald?
Yeah, again, not somebody that's really lighting the world on fire in 2008.
No, God,
like,
no.
A really good example is... I think Ali Sheedy at one point was the lead in, like, you know, 5 different movies from 82 to 86, the love interest of not attractive Ali Sheedy. Like some really like crazy weird looking teeth.
And now you have like Scarlett Johansson and Jessica Alba and Jessica Biel. It's an upgrade.
Right.
It's a definite upgrade.
Well, even you look at like the cast of Gossip Girl versus the cast of 90210 15 years ago. No contest. Like Tori Spelling does not get on the field in the Gossip Girl Hot Chick All-Star Game.
I'll take your word for that because I literally couldn't pick the cast of Gossip Girl out of a lineup. But I'll defer to you. You're out in Hollywood, so you're in the business.
I actually have not seen it.
And you have, your wife, I'm sure, watches these shows.
Well, she does watch it, so, and I'm always kind of looking up and pretending I'm not watching, but every time, whoever the brunette's on, I'm always kind of secretly watching.
Some attractive woman's on the screen, you're going to look. Sure, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you backed that up. Are you excited for the 90210 spinoff?
Yeah. Not until Gabriel Carteris gets involved. Not until she signs on the dotted line.
I think she's too old. I don't think they could pull off having, I mean, she, no lie, I think she turned 50.
She could
or she like turned 49.
She could play someone's grandmother.
Yeah, maybe she could.
Maybe she could date the star player on the baseball team. It's a true rip from today's headlines.
Well, they did bring Tori Spelling back, and they did bring Jenny Garth back.
They were available?
They were available. Luke Perry said he's out. Priestley has not really come out and said yes or no, so there's still hope. But you know, the big one. Well, everybody talks about Ian Ziering, but.
Oh, that's where I thought you were going.
No, I'd feel kind of bad to see him, but I'd love to see Brian Austin Green if he come back. On the SoapNet reruns right now, it's the year after they graduated college, and he's just hitting it big with Baby It's You Girl.
Oh, that's great. He has to sing on the show.
They make it so that he's had this great music career, and now he's kind of flamed out. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that could be the plot for him. Like, he had, like, a nice 9-year run.
Like, behind
won a couple
music.
Grammys. Yeah. Like, he's, like, the guy from, what's some mid-90s band? I don't know. That did pretty well. Like, a pop band. He's, like, one of those mid-90s or late-90s pop guys. Like, he's, like, Rob Thomas.
Okay.
Rob Thomas is kind of on the way out now, right?
Yeah, probably.
So, you have the BAG comes back as a music star that has a lot of money. But lost most of it. He's been married a couple times. He still loves Donna. He has to sell his Grammys to like make do. I mean his Emmys. And then has a comeback hit on the show, the BAG.
The BAG, that's fantastic. That writes itself right there. That's gold.
Yeah, I'm kind of secretly bitter they haven't asked me to be involved with this show.
You should definitely be a consultant.
I mean, really.
Executive produced by Bill Simmons.
At the very least, they should have me in some of the original Let's Figure Out the Storyline ideas.
They can do like an E60 in the beginning where you're all sitting around the table pitching ideas.
Yeah, show me like running for a cab. All right, last thing. We got a big trip coming up.
We do.
Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Summer League.
That's right. Joe House's bachelor party.
It's going to be about 110 degrees.
That's right.
And is your first time in Vegas?
No. This is my third time in Vegas.
Clearly
one of them was your bachelor parties, and now this puts the point on the fact that who has a better memory?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, because you were at my bachelor party and all, and I asked if it was your first time in Vegas.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's weird. I really only remember pop culture and things that happen in sports, but nothing that happened in my own life.
I mean, you could tell me like the third quarter score of the Celtics Lakers in 1987, and yet you don't remember me at your bachelor party some 5 years ago.
Yeah, I saw my cousins in Boston a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about my wedding, and they were telling me stories about my own wedding that I didn't remember. And it's not like it was like late night stories. It was like things that happened during the ceremony and stuff.
Right. So you were no way intoxicated at the time or anything. No.
I'd like to think the brain only holds, so much information.
A finite amount of information.
I've decided to use mine for sports and pop culture. So
good. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
Oh, give us the Mike and the Mad Dog update.
Well, I don't know. It depends who you believe. If you believe the Mad Dog, everything's fine. They had some problems and they've worked it all out. And the future is golden because they're both under contract for another year, a year and a half or something. And if you listen to Francesa, who apparently went on the show, he doesn't seem to think the problems are behind him. I mean, he said that they both apologized and they're getting along better, but he doesn't seem to think that everything is like as hunky-dory as Dog made it seem.
He was
much more questionable about their future.
The guy on Newsday, Neil Best, he's been like the Woodward and Bernstein combined of this whole thing.
Right.
He had the transcript of Mike's return show on Friday.
Right.
He had that long monologue about, it's no secret the Dog and I have had problems for a while. It sounded, first of all, how is it not on YouTube yet? Somebody has to put that up.
Right.
But it really did sound bleak reading the transcript.
It did.
And then We were talking about it by email this week with my friend Jim Grady, and I was thrown out that it would kind of make sense, maybe an ESPN radio move for him, and he could be on ESPN and do PTI and all this different stuff. But you guys seem to think that Mike cannot go national.
I just think he's too New York. He's got too much of a local. He's too much of a local guy. I mean, he's really New York and has a huge following there. And I'm not sure he's going to play in like Kansas. You know.
You don't think like he could play like in the respect like people don't necessarily like him, but it's like who's this guy? He's this New York guy.
Yeah,
like, people would be kind of like fascinated by him.
Almost a Howard Cosell thing in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, on a much smaller, I mean, he's not Howard Cosell on a much smaller level, but I don't know. I just, like a national, somebody in Kansas or Iowa, it would be like, who is this guy? Like, what's he doing? What's he talking about? I don't understand him, you know?
So you're saying that I cannot play nationally.
And I don't see him talking about, like, they talk about, you know, the NBA and big sports, but, you know, he's not going to talk about, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some sport, you know, or some team that has, like, a local appeal. He's not really going to talk about, like, the Utah Jazz or something, you know? It's always going to be kind of East Coast, New York-centric. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess that's what he does now. I can't necessarily say he wouldn't do that, you know, that he would be more nationally focused if he had a national show. But
well, the real tragedy is that I always was hoping that somebody, that they, Mike and the Dog, would eventually replace what used to be the Siskel and Ebert show. I don't even know what it's called now. But that really should have been Mike and the Mad Dog show. They should have had a 30-minute movie review show. That could have been the way they hit nationally.
Because one of their funniest things ever, which you and I have talked about, is when they always have Jeffrey Lyons on, and they talk about like the Oscars, and they talk about the movies.
Well, how about when they make Oscar picks?
That too. But I remember one, they had Jeffrey Lyons, and Mad Dog was talking about some movie with Oliver Stone, and he's like, I mean, Oliver Stone's always making these dark movies. I mean, how about a romantic comedy, Oliver, huh? Like Oliver Stone's going to make a romantic comedy.
I also loved when they give their picks, and Dog would be like, Mike, best supporting actor. And they give the nominees. And then Dog and Mike would be like, gotta go with Kevin Spacey.
I like Judy Dench there, Dog. I really do. She was huge in that Shakespeare in Love. Huge.
She became the queen. It is great. Man, it's so sad. I think we should talk about it for at least 2 minutes every week because it really does seem like the end is near.
The long goodbye.
When is July 13th? Potentially they could be on at the same time, right?
July 11th.
So if one of them, you know, calls in sick or whatever, then it's over.
Then you know. That's a huge sign. That's right.
It is a huge sign.
That is a huge sign right there.
Man. All right.
All right. Hey, let me just say this in closing. You know, whatever you say about A-Rod and Madonna, you know, and I know they have differences in their ages, but at least on the Yankees, we date and possibly have affairs with near senior citizens. On the Red Sox, they beat up senior citizens.
Oh.
So I think that's advantage Yankees right there.
Ah. Oh. I can't even come up with a good response.
Yeah, let's see.
I gotta say, I don't think the Red Sox have been the same since that Manny Yuke thing.
No, they haven't.
Chemistry, I don't talk about records and stats, all that stuff. Just chemistry wise.
What's going on with Manny, who's normally like this affable, like amiable dunce. It's like everybody loves, he's like a mascot, you know?
No.
And now he's like going after Euclid, and now he's beating up some 60-something year old guy.
He's turned into Dirk Diggler like about two-thirds of the way through Boogie Nights all of a sudden. He's just like berating people.
And it can't
I don't know what's going on.
And it can't be the contract thing because Manny doesn't know what day of the week it is, let alone that his contract is almost up, you know? Like, what's wrong with Manny? Problems with Mrs. Manny? What's the issue?
What's funny is that there's been some sort of reversal with the Manny being Manny stuff where people are like, oh, no, he's much smarter than people realize. That guy is a student of the game. He's in the cage for 8 hours studying tape, and he's back studying tapes. And I don't think Manny's a brain surgeon. I don't think we should swing in the other direction.
He's not an idiot, Savant. He's just an idiot, yeah.
Well, the smoking gun with him was, you know, when he was debating whether to sign with the Red Sox or not, the deal got held up because he also wanted them to hire the guy who threw him BP before games. Remember
right.
that? The guy's name was like Frankie.
Yeah.
And it got held up for 12 hours because he wanted Frankie to join him on the Red Sox. And I don't know. I just think whatever you think, he's not somebody that you can predict his human behavior
now,
on a weekly basis.
It'll be interesting to watch as the season goes on, though.
But I will say, from a chemistry standpoint, they've seemed kind of screwed up since that whole thing happened. And even when Yukos hit the walk-off, I think two Sundays ago, it was a surprisingly not good mosh pit after.
Really?
Yeah, it was only like 12 or 13 guys, didn't last very long.
That's good, because Kevin Yukos is one of the more loathsome humans on the planet, so it's every good American's duty to despise him.
Oh, my God. He's... Hey, how dare you?
I really dislike him a great deal. As a Yankee fan, I just do. I can't explain it.
So you defend Paul O'Neill, but you're gonna rip Kevin Yukos.
Of course, because, again, you're just rooting for laundry. I mean, you know, you could root for anybody in the Yankees uniform. I could make excuses for Milton Bradley if he was a Yankee, you know?
All right, John. So, wait, how far are the Yankees back from the Red Sox?
Well, they're 7.5 behind the first place Rays, and they're only like four games behind they're four behind the Red Sox in the loss column.
My prediction for this Red Sox Yankees series is more Red Sox losses followed by a complete panic back home.
Oh, there'll definitely be a panic if they lose, but I don't know. The Yankees pitching has been decent, but they can't score.
I know, but this is right around the time when they always win the, you know, they always either take 3 of 4 or 3 of 3 or whatever in the late June, early July at Yankee Stadium series, and everybody gets freaked out in Boston. Then we rally back in Fenway a couple weeks later.
I think you missed Jabba, though, because Jabba, you certainly do, because he pitched last night. I mean, you could be looking at the Ponsona, I think, pitches today, so you'll miss Sid, but, you know, you'll be getting some Dan Geis or some Daryl Rasner, who, actually not, they sent Geis down, I think Ponsona replaced him, but you'll be getting some Rasner, but you'll also be getting maybe a little Pettit and a little Mussina, so that's not bad from the Yankee standpoint.
Well, nothing would make me happier than Tampa somehow making the playoffs and then one of the games being decided on a ridiculous play like the one we had on Monday night where the ball hit the speaker.
Right.
I think that would literally make the sports media world collapse for a day.
Is that happening?
It would be a special edition around the horn just devoted to speakers. By the way, this whole thing with the maple bats has been kind of funny. All of a sudden, the maple bat has become like the serial killer of baseball.
I know. Everybody's
such
all
grave,
over that.
Grave conversations about the dangers of maple bats. Like, why don't we worry about stuff like the fact that kids sit in front rows of these games and could get hit by a foul ball?
Right.
Doesn't it seem like a little more dangerous than
they warn you that objects can fly in the stands. I guess you consider yourself warned. But, yeah, everybody's all over the maple bats thing and, like, banning them. They said that they can't, though, because there's not enough ash bats around. So they can't get rid of maple bats. So they have to, like, weed them out slowly.
Well,
the guy that first started the maple bats claims that there's too many now and they use inferior maple wood. Like, he uses solid maple wood, but the new ones now, there's been such a plethora of maple bat companies that they use, like, any wood that's laying around or whatever, and it's just not strong enough.
Well, when we're in Vegas, we'll use the old-school maple bats.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. I will talk to you next week.
Excellent.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Target the sun off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNradio.com.
Peace out.